Hey, everybody. How you doing? So, good summer to y'all. So, hey, you guys enjoying your summer?
Yeah!
All right, good deal. It's funny, because I like I said, like she said, I have a family of six kids. I'm one of seven kids. Anybody here from a big family? Okay, yeah, it's weird, because any other place I go in the country, they're like six kids, and like, like, they just don't know what to do about that. It's kind of weird. When you've got a big, and you guys know this, because a lot of you are from big families, like, when we have one, when you have one kid, people are like, oh my gosh, he's so cute, right? And you have two kids, they're like, you've got your hands full, right? Or if you have a boy and a girl, they're like, are you done? And I'm like, I don't know. You have three kids, they just kind of like, they get a little confused. Four kids, they begin to kind of cock their head like a confused dog, right? Well, we walk around with four kids, and they're kind of like, like this, like they don't know, like something's going on. Five kids, this is what happened to us, and maybe you experienced this. Five kids, they start counting you visibly as you're walking towards them, like you broke a rule, right? They're like, and then they do things like, are they all yours? No, nah, this one we just found, you know? Like, I don't know. Look at it, it doesn't even look like me. I don't know. And six kids, we've started to get the, well, you know how that happens, right? And I'm always like, yes, we do, but we like it. So that's the thing. Hey, married love is a beautiful thing, people. It's all about context. So, yeah. So, and so I am from California, and it is kind of funny. When you're from California, people are like, do you know any famous people? And I'm kind of like, yeah, I do. So I did know Kimmy Gibbler, and actually I still know Kimmy a little bit. Like, so when she got the new Full House series, like, we messaged back and forth on Facebook and stuff. And I got to be on that show, like, once. I got to hang out backstage and stuff, which was kind of cool. And when I got right out of college, I went out and I did acting in Hollywood for a while. When I got out of college, I was in, like, a Critics' Choice Award play out there. But one of my favorite things I did was I was on Days of Our Lives. You guys familiar with the soap opera Days of Our Lives? I don't even know if it's on anymore. It was the best job ever. So I got paid like $160 a day to go to Days of Our Lives and eat catering, right? So I'd just sit backstage with like famous people and I'd eat food. And what they would have me do is they'd have me put on like scrubs, like green, like hospital scrubs. Oh, I forgot to set my timer. Hold on, I'll talk all night. That's better. And so I'd wear scrubs and literally like I would just – one day I came in and they paid me $160. So there's a scene here like at the hospital bed and they're very intense looking at each other like doing this very intense thing. And then there was a smoked glass door. And then there was me walking back and forth in front of the smoke glass door. I was literally a green blur that day. That was my job. It was an awesome, awesome job. So anyway, so that's kind of a little background there. You know, it's interesting. From big families, I don't know what you think about this, but there's a reality. Like I've got six kids. My oldest is 14 years old. I was at a student meal conference over the weekend with him, just going and just being a chaperone. Anybody been to student meal conferences this year? Okay, cool. So I was a speaker at Main Campus 3. I was at a student meal conference over the weekend with my son as a chaperone. I'll host Studentville St. Louis next weekend, and then I'll be at Studentville NorCal the weekend after that. So I'm tired. Anyway, when you've got like a big family, like a bunch of kids, like you don't think about this and look at your parents with like charity and love, especially the people with big camp. Like, from my reality is I've literally been changing diapers for 14 years, right? That means for 14 years, I've been dealing with another human being's poop for 14 years. Right? And like, so if you ever look at your parents, they look tired, they are. And the thing about babies is they like poop constantly. Like, it's a weird thing. Like, you get a baby and he's like, how you doing? And you smile and you're like, you pooped, didn't you? He's like, yes, I did. Right? And you just like, it's weird. It's a very strange thing. And it's like, I used to have this rule in our family. Like, I call it the one species feces rule. Like, because my kids are always like, we want a dog. And I'm like, no, because I'm already taking care of an animal's poo. It's yours. And I'm not doing that at this point. One time I was changing my daughter's diaper. And she was a baby, and I was kind of watching TV. Only two kids at this point, so I wasn't very smart. And I'm watching TV, and I'm changing the diaper at the same time, and I hear, whoosh. That's all I heard. Just, whoosh. I looked down, it was like I'd been paintballing. It was the grossest thing ever. So I say that because you with big families, like, if you're, just look at your parents and love them, right? Like, if you ever, like, I'm so, like, oh, my mom and dad, like, they literally, especially these little, like, siblings, like, they've been wiping someone's butt for the last 14, 15, 16, 20 years, depending on your family. So just love them. And remember, that's your future. Hey, so have you noticed our world's a little bit screwy? I don't know if you've caught on to this, but it's gotten a little bit weird out there. And so I kind of want to deal with that. It seems like the rule of society today is, it's all good, man. Like, whatever, right? Like, have you noticed that mentality? And the idea is like, well, you know, like that's true for you, but what's true for me is this, you know, like in Oprah at the Oscars. Remember Oprah gave that speech at the Oscars and everyone's like, Oprah should be president, right? And she gave this big emotional speech and she said, speak your truth to the world. Well, if it's your truth, it isn't, right? Like it's just the thing. But we've entered into this time in the culture where we're kind of operating at whatever you emotionally feel at the moment, like that has to be valid. And if you disagree with a person's emotional feeling or their preference or their opinion, it's like you hate them. And it's gotten to the point where people say like, well, no, what I feel is my truth, right? There was this thing, a video clip going around YouTube for a while. And it was a guy on a college campus, and he was just interviewing students about like that whole idea of like what's truth, what's not. And he started by saying, hey, it was like a 5'10 white guy, like about my age, you know, younger than you think. Anyway, he'd come up and he would say like, hey, how are you doing? My name's blah, blah, blah. And if I told you that I was a woman, what would you say? And like all the college students were like, well, you're a woman. If you want to be, it's a social construct. If you think you're a woman, you're a woman. That's your truth, right? And he's like, okay, awesome, thank you. What if I said that I was like an Asian woman? And they'd go like, I don't know. But most like they'd be like, okay, if that's the way you feel, if that's the way you identify, you can be you're an Asian woman. He's like, okay, awesome. What if I said I identify as a 7 foot tall Asian woman? And you could see these college students' brains breaking. They're just like, because the truth is like we're supposed to say whatever you feel is right, right? And so what the problem is they're trapped now because they've already said like your feeling is your truth and they can't back off. Although they're looking at him going, you're clearly not a 7 foot tall Asian woman, right? Like, but they continue. So the reality is most of the students go like, yes, you're a 7 foot tall Asian woman. He goes, okay, what if I said I'm a 7 year old, 7 foot tall Asian woman? And most of the students were like, that's your thing, man. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. Thomas Aquinas gives a great definition of truth. And I want you to kind of put this in your head. Truth is the conformity of the intellect and the thing. So truth is the conformity of the intellect and the thing. What does that mean? It's when what you think jives with reality, right? That's truth. Like when what I think about something aligns with the reality of the thing, that's truth, right? And so for a guy to say I'm a 7 foot tall, 7 year old Asian woman, for a 40 year white guy, the reality, the thought doesn't line up with the reality. And it's an obvious thing. We can look in that and say, well, it doesn't line up. Now, before we get any deeper into this, Jesus describes himself as the way, the blank, and the life. What is that? The way, the truth, right? The way, the truth, and the life. So Jesus is truth. That's what the church teaches. And we as believers in Jesus Christ, we can say, well, what's truth? Jesus is truth, right? And that's great. But what happens is Christians go out in the world sometimes and we proclaim Jesus and we're like, truth, right? Have you ever been on social media and run into the angry people? They're like, I am speaking the truth, right? And vengeance of the Lord shall be upon you, right? And there's just like this anger. So Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, right? That's absolutely true. He tells us that. 1 John describes Jesus as what? Do you know? God is love, right? So God is love, and God is truth. So here's the reality, and this is interesting. If you're yelling at someone with the truth, it isn't. Because you've lost love, and God is love and truth. You can't just, you know, does it make sense? You're beating someone up with truth. You're not speaking truth anymore. Because you're not giving them Jesus. But on the same respect, if you're just loving people and you're forgetting about truth, it isn't anymore. It's not love. Because God is love. You can't have love without truth. You can't have truth without love. And so as we talk about kind of this idea of like battling the relativism in our society, we have to start from a point that we're Christians. We're believers in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is truth and he's love. And if we're going to go out to proclaim that and teach that, share that, witness that, then we can't be angry Christians. It doesn't work, right? And we can't be wishy-washy Christians. We can't be like, well, it's all good. I don't want to offend anybody, right? Because that doesn't work. Because love without truth isn't, and truth without love isn't. Does that make sense? Okay, write that down. It's really very profound. And you're going to need it someday. But okay, so truth is a conformity of the intellect and a thing. Truth without love isn't. Love without truth isn't. God is love. God is truth. We're going to start that way. Now, this idea that you are whatever you feel like you are, and your truth is your truth, and my truth is my truth, it's not new. In fact, if you go back and you read like ancient Greek philosophers, Plato actually dealt with this idea and refuted it. What it's called in philosophy is relativism. Have you heard this before? That didn't make any sense. Have you heard that before? Relativism? Now, most of the people you encounter who are operating out of relativism aren't going to say that they're relativists. They just don't think that broadly. They're just acting out of their emotions. They've never really dealt with the idea of truth or not truth. They're just doing what feels right in our society, right? But we're going to get kind of brought down to like to definitions because we want to kind of have a basis to work from. We want to have a place to operate from. It's because we want to be able to help inform and lead people to truth, right? And so if you don't understand what you're dealing with, you can't really help people get out of it. So relativism is broken down into two different schools. Now, it's interesting. When I was preparing to give this talk, I thought, well, let's get a definition of relativism. Like, what is relativism? And so I went to stanford.edu, and I was reading a very long PDF on relativism from their philosophy department. And what I found was that when you look for a definition of relativism, what you find them saying is there isn't a definition of relativism because it's all relative. Literally, the label's been attached to a wide range of ideas and positions, which may explain the lack of consensus in how the term should be defined. But typically, when we talk about relativism, there's two broad schools of relativism. There's what we would call global relativists and local relativists. Now, when I say global relativism, what do you guys think? Earth. And so immediately we go like, it's about the planet, right? That's actually not global relativism. Global relativism is an idea that there is no truth at all. So if I said there's gravity, a global relativist would be like, no, there's not, right? You can't prove, maybe there isn't. I don't feel like there's gravity, right? And that would be his truth. And you'd be like, well, the earth is round. And he'd be like, no, it's not, because I don't feel like it is. Right? And so that would be his truth. Now, So global relativism teaches that there is no truth. Now, before we go on, like, can you just real quick, like, global relativism teaches that there is no truth. Did you get that? Good. Talk amongst yourself. What's wrong with that statement? Talk amongst yourselves, to each other. All right. All right. So what's wrong with the statement? Yeah. I think my brain exploded just then. No, it's exactly it. It's a self-negating statement, right? There is no truth, then that statement can't be true, right? Like, if there is no truth, then that can't be true because that would negate it. Are you following me? Are you waving or raising your hand? What's up? Theoretically, like playing devil's advocate, couldn't you just say, though, that there is one truth and that is that there's no truth? But that would be an absolute truth. Okay, so you're saying generally there is no truth, but the only truth is that there is no truth. Right. But then you're admitting that there can be truth. So you're not a relativist. You're not a relativist anymore. So now you're an absolutist. You just said that there's an absolute truth, that there is no truth. You're no longer a relativist. Right? And also, it's contradictory and it's foolish. It's emotionalism. Okay, good. And so that's kind of the first step. I mean, now again, most people you run into are not going to be global relativists, right? Most people you run into are going to be what we call local relativists. And that doesn't mean that they're like, well, I can park anywhere I want to. I don't care about the local laws in my state, right? That's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you get to drive in the carpool lane when you feel like it. That's not what it means. What a local relativist is they're going to say, well, there are some truths. I believe in gravity, right? That's a truth. However, I don't believe that there's any, say, moral truths, right? That would be a local relativist, right? That's what you're going to run into more often, agreed? Right. Because what now? So most people operating from a place of relativism will say, well, we know that global warming is truth, right? That, for instance. But a man is a woman if he wants to be, right? It's a local relativism, okay? The problem with local relativism is, and this is it presents a couple issues, right? Local relativism, I think if you chase it down, you can kind of say like, well, what if my truth contradicts your truth? Whose truth is true? You go, well, my truth is I like to eat people, right? That's my truth, right? Okay, Ted Bundy, right? There were serial killers. He's just, you know, like people would say, like, I'm just following my heart. So was Hitler, right? Like that's, right? It's his truth, right? Right? So when you get to local relativism, like I'm just following my heart, this is my truth, what happens is you as a society and as an individual have no ability to contradict it. Who am I to say that Ted Bundy's taste for people is wrong, right? That's just what he was born to be, right? Okay, and so so there's an absurdity to it that you have to kind of chase out. So if you have a friend who's like, I'm just speaking my truth to the world, I'm like, I am too. Give me all your money. Right? Because I feel like you should have it. The transgenderism thing, and again, truth is love. Love is truth. You can't speak truth without love. You can't speak love without truth. If someone's dealing with gender dysphoria, they truly believe that they're not the gender that they were born, that we want to approach that person with compassion, yes? But if a person can say that I am of a different gender than what I reflected, well, in my town, there's a giant casino that was built by the Pechanga Indians. I identify with them because I like some of that money, right? Does that make sense? Like, I truly believe I'm a Pechanga Indian. There's nothing to stop me from saying that, right? And most people, and so how do we deal with moral, like local relativism or global relativism? By just challenging it a little bit, right? Okay. Going back to global relativism just for a second. If you're dealing with someone who's going to be a global relativist, you're typically not going to run into that very often, right? Most people are going to agree that there are some truths. But if you are dealing with someone who's like saying, like, there's no truth at all, what you can just do is just push them a little bit. Okay, then how come you can't fly? You know what I mean? Well, because gravity. But is that you're saying that's true then, right? You can push it to kind of the absurdities. Or you can say, okay, there's no truth. Well, what if I identify as a cat? Like, I identify myself as a cat. Is that okay? And they might go, well, that's ridiculous. Nobody would do that. Except there's a woman living as a cat in Oslo, Norway, right? Like, she's living as a cat. And most of us, most rational people, and that's a big important statement, most rational people would say that's absurd, right? Okay. So you can kind of point that out. What about someone who says, well, I'm a paraplegic. I associate myself with having disabilities. Is that okay? And most people are going to agree, no, that's absolutely not okay, because it's like lack of charity. People are dealing with those things. It's abusing the people around you by making them take care of you. It's all these kind of things. And you go, well, again, you can't tell me it's not okay because you said there's no truth. So the easiest way to refute a global relativism is just to point out the absurdity of global relativism. Are you following me? Okay, a little bit. Okay. Any questions at this point? All right, I'm going to run through some of the things I've mentioned a little bit because I think I kind of got ahead of myself a little bit. But, moral relativism. Like I said, the majority of people you're going to run into in our culture today, whether they identify this way or not, are moral relativists. So your friend you grew up with in church, who comes from a great family, who knows they shouldn't be doing the things that they're doing, they're going to say, well, it's okay because we love each other, right? That's a moral relativism. They've rationalized that choice. And so we run into that all the time. How do you negate moral relativism? So real quick, I just want you to discuss amongst yourselves, why is murder wrong? Talk to each other. Go. Okay. Now, you're a relativist or I'm a relativist, right? Why is murder wrong? Yeah. Because you're taking away someone's life and it's not yours to take away. So? I don't feel the same way. Sure.
It actually depends on the situation and how it's dealt. If you're doing it in self-defense because they attacked you first and you didn't mean or have the intent to kill them but end up happening in the end.
Okay, so you can say that certain situations justify it, but again, you're giving me like a moral absolute situation. Like it's either this or it's this. I don't feel that way.
Excuse me.
Yes. Don't worry. There's a bunch of people. I'll come over in a second. Okay. Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
No. Yes. Over here. Yes.
Yeah, so I'd say there's two answers. To a relativist, they would say that it's because the, quote, elite decided
whether it was wrong or right.
Okay, so societal relativism would say, okay, then that actually brings a good point. He's saying to relativists, if society says it was wrong, then it was wrong, or if they say it was right, it was right. Okay, yes?
But in a more specifically, I'd say, are you asking from the relativist perspective?
Well, I'm just saying, why would it be wrong? I want to go back up here. Yes? It's a mortal sin? Okay, but that's an absolute. That's an absolute. That's not a relativist. So relativism, can you, yes? Right. Again, absolutist, not relativist. So here's what I'm getting at. There's no way to say that murder is wrong without giving a moral absolute. There's no way to do it. A relativist can't say murder is wrong. And so if you have a friend who's like, well, I think that morality is how you feel, it's how you decide, then you go back. And again, we go to extremes of test case, but why is murder wrong then? Well, because it negates the value of the person. But who decided a person has value? You're telling me that a person absolutely has value. Oh, it's not good for society. I don't care. I'm not a societal relativist. I'm a, I say relativist. It's mine, right? Yes. Right. Right, society is saying absolutely, you shouldn't kill people. But if you're a relativist, you can't say anything absolutely. You're not a relativist anymore. Even if the society says you can't do it, that's an absolute. And so, okay, let me break this down. There are two. So amongst local relativism and global relativism, you have what we call an I say relativist. That's I say, which is most of the people you're going to run into on a daily basis, and a societal relativist. Now, you're saying society can dictate it and you can still be a relativist, right? So if society agrees, that's an absolute. Okay, it would be more beneficial so I can still kill you. Because I don't agree, right? Because society set an absolute. That's societal relativism, right? Okay, now I'll give you an example of the society you're talking about. The Nazis said it was totally okay to kill Jews. They agreed it was totally okay. Is it okay to kill Jews? No, but the Nazis said it was okay. Societal relativism will say whatever the society says is okay is okay. Catholics or truth, natural law would say it's wrong. And again, you can't say you can't murder someone without giving an absolute truth. We would resort to natural law, which we'll get to in a second. So again, if you've got a friend who's operating like this, well, I can feel like, I think that people should do whatever they can feel or society. All different kind of cultures have different things, Chris, and we can't judge what some people do and what some people don't do. Well, then you say, well, why is murder wrong? Real simple. You can't say murder is wrong without saying there's a moral absolute. Relativism takes away your ability to say that. And again, if society can decide, then the Nazis killing Jews is okay in the Nazi society. Muslims throwing gays off roofs in fundamentalist countries is okay if society gets to decide, if there is no moral absolute, if societal relativism is a thing. Now, we're not saying it is, but that's what this leads to. So in our culture right now, what we're running into is we're a very strong societal says culture about sexual morality, right? Society says this is okay. And so in our culture, we've decided it is okay. Now, we as people of faith are going to say, no, there are some absolute truths. It can't just be whatever society thinks or whatever an individual thinks, because then you can't say that anything is wrong that society says is wrong. If anything society says is right, there's no intrinsic truth, it's just what society says, then again, the Nazis were totally fine, right? And so that's you can kind of get to that with the idea of why is killing wrong. Okay, if what's right and wrong is just based on what society thinks, if that's the case, like if it's just based on what society thinks, then we've got a problem. Because what happens if there's an unjust law? What happens if there's an unjust situation? If the ultimate arbiter of what's wrong and right is what the society thinks, not intrinsic truth, but just what the society thinks, what happens in a situation of injustice? So for instance, in the South, in the 60s, segregation was what the society thought. It was an injustice, right? Okay. But if society gets to say what's right and wrong, there is no inherent truth, then it's okay. You have no grounds to stand up against it. Are you following? Okay, so these are some of the issues with relativism. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't get to you. Did you have something you needed to say? Right, they're I say relativists. Right, and if you're that's a local I say relativist. They're not saying a global relativism, there is no truth. They're saying in like sexual morality, they're I say what is truth. That's a local I say relativist. Again, refuting that I say moral relativism if an individual truly believes it, the easiest way to refute moral relativism is if what you feel dictates what is right and wrong, how can we say anything is wrong? Does that make sense? If what you feel is the ultimate arbiter of what is right and wrong, how can we say anything is wrong? And I'll go, you go back to that. It sounds like you're running in a circle. I'm saying the same thing over and over again. But it's basically the easiest way to refute it. Now, the other thing that's the issue we have with like societal moral relativism is it reduces truth to whoever has the most power, right? If the society gets to just say what's right and wrong and that's how it is, then essentially the loudest voice wins. Do you kind of feel like that's the situation we're in our culture right now, right? I mean, have you noticed that the troll culture is kind of driving the force right now, right? So and the mob is kind of writing like what is right and what is wrong. Do you think that truth is defined by opinion? Okay, so that's the problem with the societal relativism is it's just the loudest voice wins. Okay, another argument you're going to get for a moral relativism is moral relativism must be right because there's so many different cultures believe so many different things. Have you heard that? Right? Like, well, you say that this is wrong, but in this culture, they say this is right. And so, for instance, in Hindu culture, they say it's immoral to eat cows, right? So, I can't speak against their truth. But what we find, if you really look, and C.S. Lewis kind of writes about this, but if you really look at what most cultures believe, it isn't that they believe dramatically different things about truth. They kind of have misunderstandings about how the truth is applied. And so, for instance, you can't eat cows in Hindu culture. Why can't you eat them? Because that could be grandma, right? And no one wants to eat grandma, except Ted Bundy. Right? Does that make sense? Like, that's a misunderstanding about what a cow is. But it's not that they don't believe, they believe that killing a cow would be wrong. They believe killing grandma would be wrong, right? Or killing Uncle Ebenezer would be wrong, right? And so it's not a difference in morality, it's a difference in understanding. Again, you look at societies that said slavery was moral, right? It wasn't, again, and I'm at the genesis of it, most of the time, it wasn't that they thought slavery was right, they just didn't see the other people as people. Are you following me? There was a misunderstanding about what a person was. In fact, if you look at most Native Americans, their word for person referred to their tribe, not to the people out of their tribe. It was a misunderstanding about who people were, right? And what's interesting, as we've seen this march towards individual rights and liberties, recognizing every person as a person, where does that come from? Well, Jesus. There is no slave or free. There is no Greek nor Jew. There is no man nor woman, right? All in the Lord. And so that idea kind of comes, the truth comes from truth, right? And so again, that idea of just because people have different beliefs doesn't mean that there is no truth. Are you following? Okay. So here's the idea. If you're talking to someone, like I said, it's truth and love is truth and love. If you've got a friend who's dealing with that thing, we're like, well, I just think it's right, and it's what I'm going to do, and it's how I feel, or who am I to judge them? My nephew, when he was in college, he had a roommate who was living kind of a different life, and he goes, well, that's okay. I'm not going to judge him. I'm like, why not? right? You know, why not? And that, so we as Catholics have to kind of stop and say, well, no, there is a truth. And so I think the first step in refuting relativism is actually coming to know the truth. Right? It's coming to a courage. It's a gift, you know, it's a gift of your confirmation, right? Fortitude, like a courage to say, no, there is a truth. And so when everybody else is saying, well, it's just whatever, and I can't judge them, to say, well, I'm not judging them, but I can judge the fruits of what they're doing, right? For instance, like we know that the contracepting society is wrong, right? Oh, Chris, you're so old-fashioned. Well, okay, what's the fruit of that? Well, it's been the dissolution of marriage. It's been the complete severe uptick of abortion. You know, it's interesting. Since we've had the sexual revolution, do you think that births outside of wedlock have gone down? No, they've gone dramatically up. Since widespread contraception, has birth out of wedlock gone down? No, it's gone dramatically up. Since the widespread of abortion, has birth out of wedlock gone down? No, it's dramatically gone up, right? So guess what? We as Catholics can say, hey, it's not all good. Like, it's not working. Why? Because it denies truth. And then you can have the conversation about truth. Just because someone believes something, it doesn't make it true. Again, truth is a conformity of the intellect and the thing, right? And so we get to that. So here's what you brought up, natural law. You want to expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. It's like kind of like the laws that dictate nature, I guess. There's some certain things that, like every single culture, like you were talking about how different cultures, like Hindus, Catholics, they all have their different things, but at the end of the day, there's certain things that I think across the board, they almost like nature kind of define, like since the beginning of mankind, there's been certain things like murder is kind of always been.
Murder's wrong, right. And so. I'm going to kick that around with it for a second. If I had two trees, right? If I had two trees, one of them had like really deep roots, right? Really strong trunk, was in like really rich soil. And its branches went up really tall and had like a dense canopy of leaves, right? Just like a healthy tree, right? I had another tree that was planted on really sandy soil, right by a creek. Its roots are being undermined by that creek. It had some like rot on its trunk. Its branches were thin. Its leaves were thin and kind of sparse. Most of us would have no problem saying, well, which is a good tree? Well, the first one. Why? Because it's just better at being a tree, right? Why? Because that's what trees are supposed to do, right? That's what they are. And so you say, well, the second one's kind of sick. It's dying. It's going to fall over. It's like as far as living its life out as a tree, it's not doing very well, right? Well, so what we're saying is most of us can recognize that there's like that a thing has a natural order to it, right? And so why is murder wrong? Well, because people have value intrinsically. Like we know murder is wrong because people have value. That's a moral absolute. It's natural law. And again, we would go right back to the creating the image and likeness of God, right? Humanity was made sacred. But why is murder wrong? Because people have value. People are sacred, right? It's a natural law. People were meant for lives, right? And it's interesting. Our founders actually kind of recognized that in the Declaration of Independence, right? You know, we get to for life, for liberty, right? And it was interesting because they didn't say we as the founders of the United States are declaring people have this. They recognize God-given rights. Right? And that's they're recognizing natural law. Why is slavery wrong? Well, we all know slavery. Why is slavery wrong? Why? Because man wasn't made to be chained. Right? And we just know, like, when you see someone chained up or kept down or locked in a room, you hear a story about kids whose parents locked them in a room and never let them out of that room. We all go, no, that's wrong. Why? Because that's not what humans were meant for. That's not what people were created for. We can recognize immediately that that doesn't work. And what's interesting is that goes across cultures. In any culture, if you said a parent locked their kid up in a room and didn't feed him, there's not one culture in the world would say, well, that's their choice, right? They would say, no, that's wrong. Why? Because inherently we know natural law tells us that that doesn't work, right? And so we're going to have recourse to natural law. And again, you guys can point this out. If I gave you two triangles, one of them had really straight edges, sharp corners, you know? One of them was squiggly with fat and thin lines. The corners were kind of dull, and it just looked stupid. You'd know which was a good triangle, right? Because a triangle is a triangle. It's a natural order to it. again. So the reality of that is we can refute relativism by just having recourse to natural law. Well, natural law tells us that morality should be ordered towards the good of the individual. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. Is it ordered towards the good of the person? And again, you know, why is slavery bad? Why is murder bad? Why is rape bad? Right? Because it's not ordered towards the good of the person. So natural law is a conformity of the thing and the intellect. Because what it does is it's ordered towards the good of the person. Reality goes along with what you think. It works for the right, the goodness of the person. Another way to refute the relativism is kind of one of those classical proofs for God. You guys familiar with the classical proofs for God? Okay. One of them, it's not my favorite of the classical proofs of God, but it is, again, it's a way to kind of determine natural law, that there's a natural order to things, is there's not one person here who doesn't have an ideal of perfection, right? And I'll give you an example. I have a pretty new Mazda 6. It's a nice car. I like my car. Actually, it's my second one because the first one was totaled last year, which sucked. And then I got replaced it. But anyway, so I got this car. It's nice. When I got it, I was like, that's the best. I was like in love with this car. It was really idolatrous. And then, you know what happened? I was driving and a Tesla pulled up next to me. It's obvious the Tesla's better, right? It's just clear, right? But guess what? If like a Ferrari pulled up next to the Tesla, we'd all know the Ferrari was better, right? Right, and if a McLaren pulled up next to the Ferrari, we'd all know it's better, right? Why? Because but here's the reality. If you own like the McLaren, you own like that really super, like amazing supercar, you would drive it for a while. You would be in love with it for the first couple weeks, but eventually you'd realize it wasn't perfect, right? And so in your heart, you would know that there's something better. There's something more. There's something greater. The fact that we all have this idea, this knowledge that there's always something greater, something more, something that's better and more ideal than what we have tells us that there is something that is the most ideal. Are you following me? Where do we have this idea of perfection from? Well, from God. And if there's a God, then that means there's an order to this universe that he set it up in, which allows us to see that idea that things should be ordered, that things, there are good things and there are bad things. They're ascending levels of goodness in things. Are you following me on this one? Okay, so it's a way to demonstrate a natural law. If there's no natural law, you would have no idea that something could be better or more perfect than something. Does that follow? Okay, you wouldn't look at the bad tree and the good tree and know the difference. But because you know that there's something more, there must be an order to the universe. Things must be ordered in a way that you can understand that there would be something greater, something more. Every culture throughout history has been striving for something more, something better. Every culture has had ideals of perfection, has thought we could do this better, we could do this more, we're missing something, there's something more on the other side, right? Because every culture has been looking for that. Every people, every person in the history of humanity has been striving for something more, then the reality is there must be something more, or we wouldn't even have a concept of it. And so that again, points back to natural law, points back to the existence of God. Okay, I touched on this in the beginning, and I kind of wanted to land the plane here and open up for questions. Jesus is truth, and Jesus is love. God is love, God is truth. You can't speak love without truth. You can't speak truth without love. So how do we go out and live in this world? You know, there's because we live in a relativistic society, and again, I'll go back to this guy back here was right. Most of the people you run into are going to be what I would call a local, I say, relativist. They're going to say, it's what I feel that makes everything right. Okay? How do we go out into this world? So if you encounter someone who's living this way, maybe it's your sibling. How do you bring them truth? What's your response to the world? That's honest to goodness question. How do you reach out to a sibling who's maybe living in a relativistic way? How do you reach out to a friend who's living kind of trapped in relativism? How do you approach them? Yeah.
public conversations is ask questions and ask what their reasoning behind what they're doing.
Okay.
And then the next question is if that's good reason.
Okay.
Because if you do something without any reason, that's just foolishness.
Okay. I love what you said. Because what he said was he gave him an opportunity to be heard, right? So what a lot of times people, when they encounter the church, they don't feel like the church listens. Have you ever encountered that from friends, right? Or from people you encounter, like they don't feel heard. And so if you have a friend or a sibling who's living in a relativistic kind of place or just an immoral lifestyle or just someone you want to witness the gospel to, and they're saying, well, I think this is right. Well, then the first thing that you can do to love them, remember truth and love, is listen to them. Why do you feel that way? Blah, 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 whatever they say. And again, you're not listening to them so you can get them, right? That's not what I'm saying. It's not like, step into my trap, child. That's not what it is. It's you're honestly listening to them. You're honestly having compassion for them. You're honestly seeking to see Christ in them. Whatsoever you do for the least of these that you do for me. So step one, you listen. Again, that's great. Yeah, you hear them, right? Okay, so why? Why are you doing that? And they tell you, okay, and then you can say, all right, I heard you, and I can understand why you're saying that, and I'm not trying to judge you, but I think there's some flaws with what you're saying. Can I share that with you? Is that different than the approach you've heard, right? Is that different than the approach you've seen on the interwebs? Yeah. Okay, first off, don't have this conversation on the interwebs. Right? Okay, and they say, well, no, I don't really want to. Okay, but here's the thing. Okay. But I listen to you, right? Are we friends? Yeah. Are we? Okay, so and then you have the opportunity to speak into that. That's a real definition of tolerance. Right, that's a real living out of tolerance. In our society, we say that tolerance is like just whatever everybody does, you have to be okay with. But tolerance isn't saying everything's okay. Tolerance is saying, I'll hear you, and I'll share with you, and I'll love you, even though you're stupid. I will love you, right? Like that's right. That's tolerance. That's saying I will love and respect you and treat and love God in you, but I won't leave you in that. And so that's how we start to have that conversation. And then you have the opportunity to say, okay, so you're telling me you think it's right because it feels right to you. I'm boiling down your argument. And then you can get into those proofs we talked about, right? You can get into those ideas of, well, if all that makes something true is you feel like it's true, or all it needs to make something okay is you feel like it's okay, how can you tell anyone that something is wrong? And they, you know, and again, when you have that conversation, they'd be like, you're right, I'm stopping. Like, I don't think that's going to happen, right? Is that? No. They're probably gonna look at you and go, well, you just don't understand, right? Help me understand. Did it make sense? You don't understand, Chris. You've never been in this situation. Help me understand. We love each other. Okay. If you love each other and that makes this okay, what happens if you have a baby, right? Or I feel like I'm a woman. Okay. How do you know that? Like, no. This is, and again, that's not a thing. Like, but like, what does a woman feel like? It just feels the way I feel. Okay, ladies, and I'm getting into holding the topic here, but like, you're super complex. No, it's true, right? And like, To grow up as a woman, to go from being a girl to a woman, like, that's a thing, yeah? Right? For a guy to be like, one day, like, I feel like a woman, it's kind of like, you didn't walk the road, dude. Like, you can't. And again, shh. So, okay, well, tell me what that means to you. Well, I feel like this. I feel more comfortable like this. I feel like that. Then you might just say, well, that means that you feel more comfortable wearing those clothes or more comfortable with long hair. But you don't know what it is to be a woman because you're not. Now, I'm not saying that because I hate you. I'm just saying because I love you, right? It's because, again, truth is the conformity of the intellect and a thing, right? And just because you feel like that, Well, how can you look inside her and know what her experience has been? Like, you don't know. Or vice versa, right? Like, for I feel like a man. Well, do you know what it's like to show up on the first day of practice and have everybody else have chest hair and you not have, like, you know what I mean? Like, and your voice still sounds like this. You don't know, right? And so that's – but it's a caricature. So you have the opportunity to speak that. Are you following me? We hear tolerance is still loving a person when they're disagreeing with you, but it's not rolling over and saying that there is no truth. There's only love. Do you follow? Okay. And it's a patient thing. It's a charity thing. All right. I've got about a little more time left. Do you guys have any questions? Yeah.
Okay, so we went over that there's like a truth, natural truth to the world.
Sure. Well, I would say, I wouldn't say there's a natural, in the conversation, if they don't believe in God, it does no good to have recourse to God. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, if I give you a situation like this, there's a train going down the track.
Right.
You're in a room, and you have a lever. And if the train's going to keep going, it's going to hit and kill five people. The only thing you can do is nothing else. There's only one variable that you can do, and that's pull a lever. If you do that, the train will veer off and kill one person.
Right. And usually, it's classically, it's like your own son in that scenario, right? Yeah. There was actually a Russian film that played that out. But yeah, okay. It could go on for days. Okay. Do you want to take a shot at it?
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I guess I could try.
Sure.
So I think something that necessarily, even if you specifically knew that it would do that, you could still do that to save other people as long as you did nothing to intentionally kill that other person. So it wouldn't be... I think
right. Was the act, I'm trying to kill that person or I'm trying to save those people? So it's the okay. I'm going to just stop for 1 second because they have to catch them up. Okay, what you're saying is the unintended consequence. It's not that you're. It's not like you're choosing to kill them. It's just it's an unintended consequence of saving the other people. Okay, I think either way you're in a bad situation, and there's no good answer, right? Like that's why. Well, there is a truth. Absolutely. I think God would just go, it's done. I mean, does it make sense? Like, okay, but no. Okay, but let's put it this way. There is a truth, and the truth is it's a terrible situation. If there was no truth, it wouldn't matter. But there is a truth, and the truth says, I think I'm pretty firm moral ground here, say that you have to serve the greater good. See, Thomas More would tell us, like, you have to do the greatest good, right? And in a bad situation, when all the choices suck, you have to go with the best bad choice. And it's terrible. And that's the truth. Does that fall? Like the moral truth is like that was a horrible, terrible thing. I will live with that forever because that had consequences. It doesn't negate that. That doesn't make that this terrible and not good. See, relatives would say, well, I had to do. It was all relative and it was the choice I made. And it just was no, it was horrible. You know, so that's the truth is that something terrible happened, but I had to choose the greatest good of that. In a situation where there was no good. Does that follow? Yes.
Unless you put the train on the track, why do you have to choose one? Couldn't you just say they're already there, it's not my fault, and do nothing?
Again, yeah, it would be a sin. Yeah, it would be. Again, it's not your job. You're right. Absolutely. Nazis, send them to the concentration camps. It wasn't me. Right?
You're not
sending them. You're just letting them go. So you're pilot. It's a sin of omission. It's you did nothing when you could do something, when you should do something. Lord, forgive me for what I've done and what I failed to do.
But if you kill someone, it's your fault. If you don't save someone, it's not your fault.
That's, but again, that's, again, natural law, recourse to natural law would say it is because there was a dignity of that person that deserved protecting, and if you're in a position to protect it, then you hadn't. I mean, I think you can kind of see.
You're protecting the person that's off the track. It's the dream
of your engine. Okay, I'm gonna move on just because I've answered it, and I just want you to wrestle with that. Don't try to be right. Try to hear the answer. Does that make sense? Cool. Yes.
So, would you say that
Well, yeah, okay. We're kind of veering off, but I think we are doing that to some extent. So I'm going to get back to questions based on the kind of the morality, the relativism idea. Yes.
So I really did enjoy your talk. There was a high intelligence in it, but there is this overarching theme of gender identity throughout it.
Sure. I think it's gender identity is impossible without a relativist based society. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's an easy recourse, and you just can't get there without relativism.
Okay.
So yes. I would say the idea of a social construct is based on a relativistic philosophy. In terms of gender.
Okay.
Do you follow? Like, gender, because I think it's pretty, again, truth is a conformity of the intellect and a thing, right? And particularly, like, in gender, like, it's a very concrete thing. It's a visible thing. It's a physical thing. It's a DNA thing, right? Now saying that women wear dresses, that's a construct. That can change. That's not a big deal. Saying that men wear pants and women wear dresses, well, that doesn't define a man or a woman. But, and saying that it does, that's a construct. Right.
Sex being the genetic thing and gender being the social construct.
Right.
So is there truth in that if you accept it as a social construct, including a lot of factors?
I would say that you can't say that a man is a woman and a woman is a man. No. Right? Because if they were saying it's just, okay, we're getting into the woods here. But if they're saying it's just an idea, right? I identify as a man or I identify a woman, then why do you need to have a surgery? Why do you need to change the physical nature of the person if it's just a mental construct? Does that follow? So that it's sort of a dishonest ideology, because if that's true, then there wouldn't be the necessity to have like a surgery to it, because gender and sex aren't the same thing. But they're saying, oh, it is, because you have to change the gender of a person or the sex of a person to change the gender of a person. Okay, yes. Anybody else has hands? Yes.
Talking about
Right. Okay, is it a social construct or not? We're getting off into the why is a person gay question, or... I don't know. I don't think we can speak to that. Now, what the church would say is that, and what I think natural law would say, leave the church out of it, is that men and women are ordered towards each other, right? If you had a man and you just, if aliens came down and they grabbed two dudes and they wanted to understand humanity and they went back up and they got the dudes in the spaceship and they looked at them and they examined them, they'd be like, this doesn't work. Does that make sense? Okay. If they're not ordered towards each other. And like you look at the functioning of the different organs, they're not, if they're put together, it's clearly not, it's disordered. It just doesn't work towards the proper order of the machine, right? Of the thing. Same thing with two women. And so natural law is going to say, well, it clearly doesn't work, right? And so therefore it's acting against the order of it. Now, does that mean that people who have same-sex attraction don't really validly have same-sex attraction? Doesn't mean that. What the church has said is that people who deal with same-sex attraction are welcome in the church, should be loved, should be shown no sign of unjust discrimination, but we can't love someone and forget truth. We can't preach truth and forget love. So for a person who's dealing with same-sex attraction, the church would say, you're loved, you are beloved. That's something that you deal with, and we want to walk with you through that, just like Christ carried the cross for you. We're gonna walk with you as you carry this, and bring meaning to that. Yes.
So with that,
not you. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would probably go back to the, if there's one truth, why there's so much disagreement? Because there's a lot of if there could be one truth, but a lot of misunderstanding, and there's a lot of emotion that influences it, right? So like the situation of the guy, the dad with the railroad tracks and the five people and the, and which one do you do? If it's math, the greater good would be to save the five people. And you just, so I think, you know, if you're in a room, we're just doing math, everybody goes, well, 5 to 1, it's easy math, right? The greater good in a bad situation. But the emotional reality is that would be very difficult to do, and I would probably kill the five people, right? And so why doesn't everyone respond? Why doesn't everyone follow the truth if there is a truth? Because it's hard. You know, Chesterton said, it's not that the truth has been found or tried and found wanting, it has been found hard and left untried, right? In the back.
So you said you go with five people on your side, right?
Oh, yeah, I would. Yeah, you're gone, dude. Sorry. I mean, I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying I would absolutely. I do, and I yes and no, right? Like, okay, and so not 5 people, 100 people. Do I still have the moral duty to save my son over 100 people? 1,000 people. Right? Again, it's 5,000, 50,000 people, you know? And at some point you go, well, it's obvious. No, because you can't kill a nation for your son, right? And so, well, then you have to go, okay, well, then, that, again, worst decision ever. But again, the greater good in the terrible situation, it's always going to be a terrible situation. Not yes, you are reducing humans to mere numbers. I just kind of threw that out. But you're trying to do the greatest good in a very bad situation, right? I'm going to go over here. Yes.
For when you said loving someone is supporting like the good of that person, what do you say are the aspects of the good of a person beyond their physical?
Okay, so I don't know if I said exactly that way. Loving someone, supporting. I said loving someone is loving Christ in that person, right? And so, what I would say is loving someone I'll put it this way. If your friend drank poison every day, it didn't kill him, but they just drank poison every day. If you love that person, are you going to be like, it's okay if you want to drink poison every day? Because, you know, it's your choice, right? No. So loving the Christ in that person would be walking with them, suffering with them, right? Like as they're poisoning themselves, like, but then also trying to lead them out of that. And so again, if your friend at school who's having sex with a boyfriend, and it's totally wrong, but she's doing it, right? Loving that person is walking with them, suffering with them, but then also trying to have them stop hurting themselves.
So in that instance, would it be a case of like, I think the good of that person would be to stop having sex?
I wouldn't think it'd be a case of I think again, it's a recourse to natural law. Right? What does sex do? It makes babies. That shouldn't be like a, I don't know, what does it do? It makes babies, right? Okay, good. What's the proper, you know, if we look at how, is a person suited to take care of and raise a child as an individual? No, it's been shown through multiple studies, you know, that children flourish and do better in a mom and a dad household, right? Like their brains develop differently, right? And so if sex makes babies and children are better in a two-parent household and the biggest indicator of poverty is single parenthood, right? Then it's not you say it's right. It just is right to not have sex until you're married. You're not saying it. It just is. And you're trying to lead them to that truth. Okay. Yes, go ahead. If everyone rationally just tried to decide the truth without emotions, I have no idea. I mean, I would hope. I would hope. You know, what's interesting is, again, if we go back to kind of where did this come from, again, Plato argued with it in the classics. So it was going on in the Greeks, but it really wasn't until kind of like the time of the Enlightenment and beyond that we started getting into this idea, you know, and the philosophers just out of that period. And it's really taken from then till now. Prior to that, kind of through the Middle Ages, right? Now, we as Catholics, we would say Middle Ages. Why? Because it was the age of the church in a lot of respects, right? But it's called the Dark Ages. It started being called the Dark Ages when people started wanting to refute the truth and the authority of the church, right? And so at one point, you kind of had universal agreement about moral truths in the Western world and in some respects in the Eastern world. Since the time of, the Enlightenment, since the time of the Enlightenment, what we've seen is truth has become more and more relativized. I would say now it would be safe to say that we're actually victims of the Enlightenment. Because what we said is all truth has to be proved in a laboratory. The problem is it can't all be proved in a laboratory. Does that follow? So I would like to think that if everybody worked on it, they would. I can't say that because I'm not God. But if perfect intellect and will was there, would it all make sense? Yeah, why? Because God is truth, and he is perfect intellect and will. So anyway, I think I'm out of time, actually, guys. So thank you, guys.